Blog Talk Radio.
Psychiatrist in private practice since 2003. Dr. Carroll previously was the Director of Inpatient Services at the Bay Pines VA Hospital and the Bay Pines VA Medical Center. Dr. Carroll specializes in the treatment of children ages 6 and older and the treatment of adults, in other words, from the womb to the tomb. She's also an all-time triathlete, so if you're having a problem breaking through to that next level in sports, give her a call. Area code 813-689-2466, or you can see her at her office at 336 East Bloomingdale Avenue in Brandon, Florida. A couple weeks ago, we had asked for prayers for a young man who played football for me for 3 years, young Tony Garcia. Tony had gotten a very bad strain of the flu, and was admitted to All Children's Hospital the 2 days before Thanksgiving. And unfortunately, he passed away on Wednesday. So we're going to dedicate this show to Tony. He was a fighter all the way. He was a great kid. And we were at the funeral today, and it was it really was a showing of love for from the community for Tony. So I want to thank everybody that came, and it was a great day. Well, we had some tremendous fights last week, huh?
Absolutely, absolutely.
Good gravy.
Yeah. I've had some good showings.
Yes. Yes. Is this one I want to tell you? I want to get into it. No, that's the wrong one. Yeah, come on. You never know your equipment never works when you want it to. God.
Well, I know Keith Thurman. He looked real good in his comeback fight from his surgery.
Yes, yes. And we're gonna have a chance to talk to his trainer tonight. Dan is gonna be on with us at the 6:25, we can talk to him about how that went, because he was at he was always at his side, of course. But we also had Adonis Stevens. Stevenson get in there and take a command of the fight from start to the finish, huh?
Yeah, and Adonis Stevenson, we're looking for the matchup with him and Kovalev right about now.
Right, right. And how do you think that'll come out?
Well, Adonis moves his feet. He darts in and out. He has a powerful. He's a southpaw, and he has a powerful left hand. Yeah, he'll throw the left hand. He'll throw it from a variety of angles. He'll throw it straight. He'll throw an uppercut. He'll throw it overhand. He'll hook it, and he's pretty quick with it. He's not much with his right, actually. He's all right. He's pretty good, but he, as far as using his right, he's not. He doesn't have a powerful right. What you have to look out for, though, is he'll change levels on you with his left, and he's pretty sharp with it.
Mm-hmm.
With that being said, him and Kovalev will have a reach, a range advantage on him, and I don't think that Adonis is defensively slick enough to really get away from what Kovalev is doing. And with Adonis, it's almost the same as, Kovalev is facing Pascal, and those styles, except for the southpaw, Adonis being a southpaw, those styles, they're kind of similar, Adonis and Pascal, to where they'll use their feet on the outside and they'll dart in on the inside to throw their punches. Adonis hits harder than Pascal, but as far as, you know, that they're the same footwork, similar footwork, I'll say. And you just can't jump into what Kovalev is throwing. That's one thing. Kovalev, he hits hard, and he has pretty good timing on his shots. He has pretty good range on his shots. He's not going to get inside and brutalize you. He'll hurt you within boxing range, and that's dangerous for people who want to use their feet and try to jump in and out, because you're going to end up jumping into something or even jumping out of something on your retreat.
Yeah, that. You think he'll just will that fight be in the middle of the ring, or do you think that's going to be a runaround?
That fight will be everywhere.
Yeah,
Adonis uses his feet a lot. Kovalev, he doesn't mind following you, but I mean he'll follow you and be effective. He'll cut the ring off at times, but he'll follow you and he'll still be effective. Adonis, I don't think he's defensively slick enough to avoid the big shots of Kovalev.
About the what do you think about the Andre Durrell fight? He seems to another one that was went the full 12 rounds, but he got the unanimous decision, and it just didn't seem to. It looked like it was a one sided fight at one point.
Well, Andre Durrell, he's also coming back from eye surgery. So he's beginning to take his competition slow. Although he has a pretty good level of competition, he's taking his level. He's taking it slow. He's going to step his level up. And it's interesting because I was looking up some stats. I didn't know that Gennady Golovkin beat him in the amateurs.
Oh, I didn't know that either.
So I mean, so.
Wow, that's interesting. But he's after he got this played out of the way, he started calling out for Frotch. What do you think? How do you think that would go?
Well, the first fight with Frotch, it didn't go well for Durrell.
Right.
And it's been a lot said for Frotch's roughhouse tactics, but Durrell looked skittish in there. He looked like he didn't want the contact. He didn't want the physicality of Frotch.
Mm-hmm.
It took him a long, long time to get. It took him all fight to get comfortable. But when he got comfortable, especially in the 12th round, he rocked Frotch, put Frotch down with a nice shot.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it depends how fast Durrell gets comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
If he gets up, and it depends how much Frotch has left.
Right.
I mean, Frotch is what? He should be like 36, I think.
I think he is, yeah.
Yeah, he's around 36 years old.
Yeah.
So it depends what Frotch has left. I mean, he had a lot left against in that George Groves fight. He had a lot left, but I don't Frotch for one thing. I don't think he'll fight that pressure fight that he fought Durrell with the first time.
Mm-hmm.
I think he'll box a bit more, try to leap in and find his spots. And I think once he starts getting outboxed, then he's going to go back to trying to get physical with Durrell. One thing about Durrell. I haven't seen him get rocked or anything, but he does seem to shy away from physicality a bit. And and that doesn't really do well with Frotch, as we've seen with Frotch and Lucien Butte.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it just, as you said, Frotch has had this moniker on him, or at least he's lived up to the fact that he wants to be the bully in the ring. This should be something that he's going to have to face now with somebody coming at him like this. Don't you think?
Yeah. Well, with Durrell's going to let him be the bully. Durrell's going to dance around and just outbox him from the outside if he can.
Mm-hmm.
If he can. Carl Frotch is not. He's not going to be successful on the outside against Durrell. And when they fought the first time, he knew that from round one, and he took it to Durrell. If he does that, then it'll be a rough fight for Durrell.
Mm-hmm.
Even if Carl Frotch's age is creeping up on him, it's still going to be a rough fight for Durrell.
Uh-huh.
Not saying he can't win it, but that just Carl Frotch is a knowledgeable fighter who knows how to get to his opponents. And with Durrell, I mean, he has to use his feet all fight long. His range all fight long.
Uh-huh. I'm going to, Ty's not with us, I'm going to call Dr. Chris on the line here without going off the air.
Right.
All right, here it goes. I know he's going to be at the. He's going to be. Hot under the collar because his Eagles are only up by 4.
Hello.
Hey, Chris, how you doing?
Fine, pretty good.
Yeah, good. We got you.
We had a cold day up here today.
Is that right?
Yeah.
But there was no wind, so it was nice. I worked outside all day.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I...
Go ahead.
I had a friend call me from Arizona last night. About the fight, about Keith's fight. You say Birmingham's going to be on later on?
Dan's going to be on in 13 minutes.
All right.
Yep.
I got something I want to ask him. All right.
Yeah, he called
out.
Okay, it's good, Izzy.
I was just going to ask Dr. Chris how he's been feeling.
What's that?
How you been feeling?
Great. I've been feeling great. I've been working out. I started splitting wood this week by hand. So... About 4 weeks, I'll be ready for Mayweather.
There you go.
It's all it's going to take. That and about 40-pound weight loss. You think I could do it?
Maybe.
Well, you can help you.
What did you guys think of Keith's fight last week?
We were just about to talk about that. Go ahead, Z.
Yeah, Keith, I think Keith looked good. He looked good. He looked patient. He looked sharp. That's probably the word that fits. He looked sharp.
You think he had the right game plan for that fight? Boxing?
Yeah.
Truthfully, that guy couldn't hit.
And it looked like he came in to do that. He just wanted to kind of work on something. He looked like he wanted to just get his sharpness right. He didn't want to really crack that guy out of there.
Yeah, I told Donald last night, a guy called me, a guy that I've been going to fights with for 50 years. He said, why didn't he blow that guy out of there? I said, I think he just wanted to get some rounds in. I said, he had the operation. And I said, I think he just wanted to accumulate some rounds, move around, you know, carry the fight, you know. And I said, I don't think he was really trying to knock him out. I said, it didn't look that way to me, you know. I mean, he's, you know, he moves okay, but he's never going to be Willie Pep. You know what I'm saying? He's not... I don't think that style is going to carry him very far. That's what I'm saying. I don't think that's going to carry him very far. If he steps up to the Mayweather class, I don't think that style is any good for him. I think he's a power puncher, and he's got to utilize that. But, you know, maybe we expected too much of him. I mean, he won the fight. He, you know, it showed he can box, and he's got the stamina to go, you know, a lot of rounds backing up, moving around. But I myself always believe you never know when somebody's going to headbutt you. You want to get a guy out there early if you can. You never know when a damn guy's going to headbutt you and put you out of commission for 6 months. So I don't know, but, you know, I guess.
I tend to agree with you. You want to get a guy out of there as fast as you can, because any time anyone can land a lucky punch. And get you
lucky punch, give you a permanent injury, headbutt you and cut your eye real bad. You know how left-handers, when you're fighting left-handers, they step different, and it's very easy to butt heads with a left-hander. So,
you can get working like that with sparring. I think you can get a whole bunch of sparring in when you get your rounds like that sometimes.
Yeah, that's what it appears to me. I'm going to ask Dan when he comes on, was that your game plan to stretch it out and get some rounds in, and you know,
but I
would never have that mentality to do that. I would try to get him out of there, knock him the hell out of there as fast as I could before I get a headbutt. Now maybe there's less chance of a headbutt if you stay in box like that. I don't know. I couldn't be sure of that, but I mean,
he might need that boxing sort of style for other fights. With Mayweather, I think he'll use some of that, but he's going to be a little more trying to get inside, probably, or land his power shots when he can in his spot. With that sharpness, I'm thinking if he fought a guy like Madonna and used that along with his power punching, there's no way Madonna could beat Keith. No way.
No way.
It'd be clean. If he fought a guy like Tim Bradley and he was sharp like that, there would be no way Tim Bradley would beat him.
No, you're right.
No way. But, I mean, maybe, you know, against maybe a guy like Mayweather, he would probably have to employ a little more of his, you know, power punching tactics.
Yeah, he'd have to back him up. He'd have to go after it. He'd have to go after Mayweather. Mayweather's not going to come after you.
No.
He's going to move around and counter punch it. And Keith's going to have to face it. He's going to have to be the aggressor, you know?
He'll be a little more flat-footed.
Yeah, well, that's it. When you come on the flat of your feet, he can punch.
Yeah.
You're not going to hurt anybody on your toes, you know. And he can grab that floor with the bottom of his feet, and he can hit, man. He, you know, I like Golovkin. Like, Golovkin has one style, try to kill you, no matter who you are. Or when it is, he's going to get you the hell out of there as fast as he can. And that's the style I like. And, I mean, I'd like to see Keith do that, you know, maybe in his next fight. Get him the hell out of there, man. He's got the power and the potential to wipe those guys out of there, those welterweights out of there. But, you know, we'll see what Dan says. You know, maybe he agrees with us and he just took 10 rounds and wanted to get 10, 12 rounds in and and see what the hell, you know, if he could, what he could do and how his shoulder would hold up. What was the extent of his operation that he had? Did he have a rotator cuff injury, or do you guys know what it was?
I thought it was a Tommy John's surgery, wasn't it, Z?
Yeah, I heard it was similar to the injury Vernon Forrest had.
Yeah. That would be a...
What did Vernon Forrest have? I mean, what did he have? What type of shoulder injury did he have?
I think he had Tommy John.
Tommy John's.
If I'm correct.
Well, that's elbow surgery.
No,
on his shoulder.
He ripped his. No, I'm sorry. It's not the rotator cuff. I thought it was a muscle that he ripped in one of the fights, and he had to. That's why he had to be operated on.
Mm-hmm.
So we can ask Dan. I'm going to go up here in a minute and get Dan on.
Yeah, he'll be able to tell us.
Yeah,
and I know.
So who's fighting?
Vernon Forrest didn't, he showed, his right didn't look exactly the same after he had his surgery. But Keith, in his fight, it seemed he didn't have any ill effects to his arm, his shoulder.
We could ask Repicy that question if he'd call in. When you want to hear from him, he stays home, that guy. You know? when you need him, where the hell is he? He can tell us. Maybe he'll call in later on. We'll see. Well, how do you like the light heavyweight tonight? I never saw this Russian fight. Is he any good?
Who's that?
Does the fight, isn't the light heavyweight fight on tonight?
You're talking about Adonis Stevens.
Yeah, is he fighting tonight?
Yeah, they fought last night.
Oh, they did?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Who won?
Stevens.
What are they doing fighting on Fridays? I thought that would be a Saturday night fight.
Yeah, that caught me off guard too, Dr. Chris.
Yeah, I didn't see it. Damn. How did he look? Did it knock out? Did it go the distance? What happened?
I think I'm not even sure. I just saw that Adonis won. I didn't read too much far beyond that.
Mhm. I didn't know. I thought the fight would be tonight, but you know, we'll find out. We'll ask Dan. We got two questions for him. Who won last night's fight, and then what he's gonna, you know, is that gonna be key style for the future? You know? I don't know. The Eagles are on now up here, and they were looking good. They were looking bad, and then all of a sudden they came back, and they're winning. They're winning now, but Washington's giving them a little battle. They got one sack on Griffin. On RG3, they got one sack on him, and that kind of turned the game around. But I think they're winning 14-10 maybe, I forget. But, again, Saturday night, who the hell thought they were going to, you know, I wasn't paying attention and I'm outside working. Somebody said, well, the Eagles are on at 4. I said, well, let me call it a day then. No, they got to win this game. So.
It looks like Washington's driving on them, though. They're in the red zone. But what do you think about the Amir Khan Devin Alexander fight, Dr. Chris?
Well, Khan showed me a lot of speed, a lot of hand speed, a lot of good movement. And you know what? He looked damn good, to be honest with you. I mean, Alexander's a hard guy to fight. He's very difficult to fight. And he made Alexander look slow. And he's the first guy ever to do that. I think if he gives himself just a few months of physical training to build up to a real true 147-pounder, I think he's going to be a factor. I think he'd give Mayweather a hell of a fight. And because he sure in hell got better leg action and movement and longer arms, and I think he'd be one hell of a contest with him and Mayweather. But he's not a...
We're joined by...
What do you guys think?
We're joined by one of the finest people that I've met in a long time, and one of the best boxing coaches as everybody can see by what he's done with some of our friends or fighters, Mr. Keith Thurman or Mr. Cherry and a couple other really good fighters that we've had. Dan Birmingham is with us. Dan, good evening, and Merry Christmas to you. Happy holidays.
Merry Christmas to you all. Yeah, how you guys doing?
We're doing great. We're doing great. I guess we all want to tell you how much we were in awe of Keith with his return, and it looked fantastic last week. And I know that's all. Everybody seems that you've got these guys cut. Edner looks fantastic. He had a nice outing up in the Philly, in and out early. I know these guys have some questions. So, Chris, you want to ask your question?
Yeah, Dan. I was curious as to the game plan you guys went into the fight with. I don't know if you knew much about the opponent or not, but he appeared to me to be a light punching, opponent, and I thought Keith would try to take him out. It seemed like he was trying to get some rounds in and do some boxing and do some counter punching. Was that your game plan, to fight that way?
Well, our game plan is always to go in and box and never to look for the knockout. I mean, he turned southpaw and hit him with a hook and caught him in the first round and dropped him. But when the kid got, he's not a kid, I should say the old man. The old man got back up, and, as the rounds went on, when we got to the fifth round, he sat down after the fifth round, and I told him, I said, just box. Don't worry about knocking this guy out. I think he came to win. He was a strong guy, and I just thought it was a better plan to go forth and just box. If he caught him, okay, but, box, win every round.
Mm-hmm. How do you hold Keith back?
He listens to me in the corner. He's a creative fighter, and, all fighters are headstrong and such, but, when they're in the trenches and they need advice, they look to me, and I try to give them the best advice I can. And at that moment, I thought it was just a box. Don't try to overload on this guy and, run out of steam. And then, I thought the boxing was the game plan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of guys called me after the fight, and they all were questioning the game plan. I said, the guy did have some surgery, and maybe they just wanted to get some rounds in and see how it would hold up, how his stamina would be. And we were discussing it before you came on. What type of surgery did he have?
He didn't have any surgery. All he had was tendonitis in his shoulder, and it was on.
Thought he had surgery.
No, he didn't have any surgery. He just had therapy, He didn't need surgery, so he didn't go forth with that.
Mm-hmm.
Getting back to the game plan, I didn't think this guy, even if Keith started bombing him, would take him out of there. The guy was pretty solid. He was only down one time in his whole life, and it was in, I think, 2007. And besides that, it was great that he got the rounds in.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's good. It would be like, Keith obviously listens to you. He doesn't have a head like Arturo Gatti has. Arturo Gatti went out there, as soon as he got hit, it was a brawl. It was, he wasn't going to, rarely did he ever actually try to win a fight over 10 or 12 rounds. And I'm just wondering that Keith obviously listened, and he won, a big unanimous decision. He didn't get hurt,
No, not at all. We prepared to go 15 rounds if he had to. He was prepared to go the distance. If you can't knock a guy out, then you beat him every round, or you attempt to.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Dan, what's the game plan going forward for Keith? I know that on boxing where they wanted to go for Mayweather, but what's the next game?
I spoke to Al Haymon 2 days ago, and we want to fight the big names. We want to fight Khan, we want to fight the big names. Of course, we want to fight Maidana. He's really on Keith's hit list, but he's not going to come out till June. So, and I want Keith to get in one fight before then, even if it's late June or July. So, you know, we're unsure of the opponent, but at this stage it looks like late March or early April for his next fight.
Great. Mm-hmm. How about Edna?
Hey,
and Al says we're going to be in big. We're going to be in big fights. That's Al's words.
Great. Great.
Hey, Dan, this is Zito. I want to first congratulate you and Keith on your tremendous victory. Keith looked very good, very sharp.
Thanks, man.
No problem. And I want to ask you, Dr. Chris and I were talking earlier, and we were talking about Keith's style. As far as Keith, I said, like, fighting a Madonna with those type of sharp boxing skills, Keith, I think he would destroy your Madonna along with his power punch. A guy like maybe a Mayweather, would you guys work to go back to keep being a little more flat-footed to get at Mayweather?
Go ahead and finish.
No, that was basically the question.
Okay, well, the game plan against Mayweather, and I think to beat Mayweather, you need a guy like Keith that's a warrior that jumps on his chest from the opening bell. Madonna had the game plan but couldn't execute it. Keith's a little bit better with distance, timing, and accuracy. And, of course, I think he has more power, so I think he'd give Mayweather a lot of problems. I think with Floyd, though, he's just so skilled. You can't try to out-skill him. You got to out-brawl him. And Keith's got some skills in there, but I think it takes a real warrior with some skills to beat Mayweather.
Well, Dan, when Mayweather backs up with his right hand high, he kind of pulls his head way back, his entire liver is wide open to a left hook, and everybody keeps...
You're right.
Everybody goes to his head, and they miss him. He's way the hell back, and then he counters. I think a guy that would throw that left hook to the liver would bring him right down to the ground.
No doubt. Hit that liver and, you know, the chest area and the arms area and just keep firing them hooks because he rolls right into the hook. He rolls away from the right hand on, you know, against
the right hand.
There for the hook. You got to go hook crazy with him.
You know, when you have an iron jaw, I don't care who you are. When somebody hits you in the liver, it brings you to a screeching halt.
Yeah, you can take it better on the chin than you can in the liver, that's for sure.
One time Tex Cobb was sparring with Paige, and he hit Tex in the liver, and Tex jumped up and danced around the ring and yelling, and Georgie Benton screamed at Paige, "You hit him low," and he said, "I didn't hit him low." And Tex said, "I never felt a shot like that in my life." Yeah, but everybody went for Tex's head because it was always wide open. But he said, "I never got hit in the liver, only once in my life." He said, "By Paige." And I said, "Tex, I got hit once in the liver, and the pain started in the liver. Next thing I know, it was in my ear. It seemed like it radiated up to my skull." I said, your whole body is stymied. I mean, it brings you to a halt. And you got and Basilio got hit by DeMarco with a, and Basilio just bluffed it. He went down, and DeMarco didn't know how badly he was hurt. But, you know, nobody can take a punch to the liver. It's immune to, you know, you're just going to feel extreme pain. And that's the punch I think is going to bring Mayweather down. When somebody does get in, you got to land it. And he can land it against the ropes because he backs up. That's his style. When the ropes, if you press him into the ropes, he backs up. He carries his right hand high. When he leans back, that elbow comes up. And there's and Madonna was going for the head. Everybody goes for the head. And the wrong thing to do against him.
Well, the first fight, Madonna went for the body. He successfully landed a lot of left and right hooks for the body. Because before he started rolling to his left, he left his right side open. And Madonna was landing flush right shots, right hooks to the body.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when you want to back Floyd up, you have to have a good jab. You have to have a good jab to back him up. I mean, he's so fast coming over the jab, but, I mean, still, you have to have a good jab and somewhat good timing.
Yeah, definitely.
Dan, we know that you have both Keith and Edna out. Has Edna got anything coming up in the near future? Do you know?
Nothing scheduled as of this stage. We're looking forward to next year. Everything's quiet right now in boxing, so
sure.
We're just waiting for the first of the year to open up, and then we'll see what happens.
Is there anybody else in, that you have down there that you think is going to be moving up this year?
I got a bunch of up-and-comers. We got a good little amateur squad. You're going to hear about some kids in the future. That's all I can say.
Mm-hmm. Great. Well, we know that you do a tremendous job. We've seen the results, and is there some way you've changed? Now, I know that when Edner first came there, he tried to knock everybody out. Now you've got
yes.
him thinking in the ring, and he's cut. He's looking good. He's looking fast. He's looking very sharp with his footwork, his talent, and Keith definitely is a very astute boxer is, I guess, the best way I could say. I mean, he knows when to push, when to push the card, and when not to, when to back off a little bit, give himself a break, and then go back in and just annihilate people.
Mm-hmm.
So, is there any changes that you would see in their styles, or is there anything that you'd be working on this year?
Oh, sure. We're always working on stuff. When Edner first came to me, he was. You know, he was a straight-ahead brawler. He wasn't very calculated in his approach. So I tried to get him, first of all, to relax because I thought he was too stiff all the time. So I got him to relax a little bit. And then we worked on, you know, rhythm and stutter step and feinting and getting his distance because he always fought at a different – he'd be in too close or out too far. So we worked on range and distance and then execution and it showed in his last fight. You know, used to be when he'd get nailed, he'd come at you with all costs and just let everything go instead of observing
sure.
his opponent, you know, and trying to work off the reaction of his opponent. So I think he'll become a better boxer, I think, in that regard. We just got to keep going on it.
Uh-huh. Great. See?
Dan. Oh, yeah, Dan. Now, my brother and I, Ty and I were discussing about trainers nowadays, how a lot of them, you could only fit their form of fighting, meaning that, per se, Garcia, they'll deal with a more straightforward brawler-type guy. Freddie Roach would deal with a more explosive hand-speed kind of guy. The Mayweathers deal with more defensive technique. Do you think that trainers now are more limited to what they do as far as that goes? They can't train any sort of fighter?
Well, I really don't observe too much training going on other than what goes on in my gym. I just observe the fighter, and you can see sometimes that they're not being taught, you know, proper things. And with my whole theory is you got to let a fighter be himself because guys like Edner, you know, he's not as creative as Keith. So Keith is always trying new things and working on new things, and if they work, they work. That's how he's evolved into such a diverse style that he has now. So with Edner, he has to be taught more. But I think, you know, it goes back to my amateur days. I had a great trainer and a guy named Art Mayorga from Youngstown, Ohio. You know, and I trained with him for 6 or 7 years, and he taught me so much about boxing and life. He really was my second father. And then I moved to Florida here, and still to this day I still hear him. He's been deceased about 10 years, but I still hear him in my ear about little things. He just knew so much about the sport. He was an Army champion, and he was Sonny Liston's sparring partner for years, and you had to be a tough guy to be one of those.
Oh, sure.
So I think it goes back to who taught you and how you develop yourself as you move forward.
Dan, one thing we've neglected to do, and I apologize for that, is that we forgot to ask you to tell our listeners the last couple of times about where your gym is and, you know, how they can get anybody that's interested in training with you, how they can come up and get some lessons from you.
Well, we've been at one location nearly 20 years. It's in St. Pete. It's, I think, my fifth gym. We finally bought a place a couple of decades ago, and now Keith Thurman owns the piece. I wanted him to have a part of it because I always told him if something ever happened to me, you know, you take this gym over and you move forward. But we're located at 1330 49th Street South in St. Petersburg, Florida. And anybody can come in at noon on Saturday. And, you know, if they want to spar, we have open sparring. Sometimes we have 12, 15 clubs in there on a Saturday afternoon, and everybody's getting work for 4 or 5 hours. It's turned into a really fantastic situation for guys that want to get good boxing in.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, and we have an amateur program. We open at 5 o'clock till 7 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
And just come on in.
Great. That's great. I got to say that the atmosphere there is just one of camaraderie. It seems like everybody there works. You've got them working together, and they seem to all help each other out and seem to work with each other.
That's
great.
We have a big family there. I just don't work myself. Keith Thurman's been coming in for the last few years and helping us with the kids. And we got a big Samoan guy, Billy Tavaki. He's been helping us with the kids for years. And Rob Mendez, a partner of ours in the gym, he's in there and helping us with the kids. And we got a physical therapist, Eric Wilson, that comes in and works on everybody, never charges anybody anything, but stretches them and, you know, works on what's ailing them.
Mm-hmm.
So, and Chris Getty, Ben's son, has been like my right-hand guy for a long time. I've been trying to groom him and help him, and he's really coming alive in the gym. So we got Ben's spirit in there with us, you know, just by Chris being there all the time.
Yeah, that's great.
Hey, Dan, I got a question for you.
Sure.
Way back when I was 18 years old, I was trained by a man probably 70 years old. And when he'd see, he had more pros. He only had one or two amateurs and about 15 pros. When he'd have an amateur come in, he'd see how they would run out of gas quick. And, you know, they're tense and they're holding their arms tight. So what he would do, he would make you spar 6-minute rounds. Instead of 2 threes, he'd go 1 6 and another 6. Well, the first time he did that to me, my tongue was hanging out. The next 3 minutes, you know, and I got the living hell beat out of me because I had nothing in the tank. And it dawned on me that you have to learn to pace yourself. And the only way that you say you teach a guy to relax, the only way you can relax is, I know this round 6 minutes, and we got 14-ounce gloves on, so I can't go crazy. I got to pace myself.
Yeah.
When I entered the ring for my first amateur fight, the guy told me, Joe Arillo was an old-timer too, he said, most amateurs come out, swing like hell for 2 minutes, run out of gas in a second round, then you can knock them out. And I said, all right, Joe, what do you want me to do? He said, just hold on, you know, make sure you don't go crazy. And he said, I guarantee you'll knock him out in a second round. Well, you know, I had to take this guy at his word, and that's exactly what happened. I knocked the guy out in the second round. About midway through the second round, he yelled, open up, and boom, boom, boom. And the guy was out of gas, and I knocked him out very easily. And I did that in my second fight. Because I had professional trainers, the amateur gym down the street and the one in Wilmington, Delaware, they were training the guys different. But when you tell a guy, you know, when you let that round go 6 minutes, you start pacing yourself different. You start, you know, you're not tensed up with your muscles. You're trying to make it to the 6 minutes and then go get your 1 minute rest and then go another 6. And that was a great lesson for me. That's how he got me to relax. Did you ever try that with any of your fighters?
Oh, most definitely. I use it all the time. I'll tell my guys, even with bag work and shadow boxing, anything, go 2-3 rounds. Don't take a break, you know.
Yeah, that's what he did. He had some ranked fighters. He had Rocky Jones, a ranked light heavyweight. He had some good middleweights, but they couldn't get by Georgie Benton. And it was great middleweights. And he had a couple guys fought Chico Vidra. I mean, he turned right around, and as soon as he got me, he said, you know, you're going to do 6-minute rounds. And he did the same thing on the back. Let you go. When this 3 minutes are over, he said, keep going. And I learned very quickly how to pace myself. And I talked to Tex Cobb about this, and he said, damn, nobody ever did that for me. He said, you know, I went 3-1, 3-1. He said, but I never felt good in the late rounds of a fight. I said, Tex, maybe you didn't know how to pace yourself. You know, and he said, well, I don't know. You know, sure in hell can't find out now. I'm too old. But Benton was a picture boxer, classic counterpuncher. And how does a guy like that train Tex Cobb? What do you do with him? He didn't know how to train. I have to say this. I don't think he knew how to train Tex. Tex would throw the right hand first, leave the right hand out. A guy like Michael Dokes would step back, counterpunch with an uppercut, and hit Tex right on the chin. Right on the chin. He never threw a hook behind the right hand. And, you know, I imagine you kind of, when a guy's got a chin like that, you just take it for granted, you know, and you don't fight him, you don't teach him what you should.
Yes, I think Tex Cobb was too tough for his own good, the fights I've seen.
I watched him fight Michael Dokes, and Michael Dokes counterpunched every right hand Tex threw at him. Tex never jabbed, hardly jabbed. And
Dokes was sharp. He was quick.
Yeah, and Michael Dokes was pretty quick for a big guy.
Oh, yeah. He had fast hands. Yeah, real fast hands from Akron, Ohio.
Yeah, big kid.
Yeah.
He got beat by, I think the South African beat him for the title.
Coetzee. Yeah. Yeah, one of my buddies went down there and fought him from Youngstown, Ohio, a guy named Mike Kornicki. You remember Mike Kornicki?
Yeah.
He was rated at one time in like the top 11 or 12. He went down there, and my trainer told him not to jab to the body early on because this guy has a bionic right hand. He had metal put in his right hand, and besides that, he had a good right hand. And don't you know Kornicki goes out there within the first 30 seconds and tries a jab to the body, gets caught with an overhand right, and that was the end of the fight. All the way to South Africa for that. Yeah. And Mike was a good fighter. He used to spar with Joe Frazier all the time.
Mm-hmm. When you jab to the body and you move your head to the right,
yes,
the obvious counterpunch is a straight right hand, right over. You cannot come... When you're over that far to your right, you can't hit the guy with a hook, and you're really a sucker for a right hand. And I had a heavyweight try that. I said, don't jab to the body and move your head to the right because you're going to get killed by right hands. That's exactly what happened. Boom.
We call it a break jab in our gym. We call it a break jab where you break to the right and you get your whole body behind the punch and you break out of the line of fire.
Mm-hmm. It's hard to do if you fight a good right-hand fighter, you know. You're very vulnerable over there. You know what? I remember the Mike Tyson when he was going to fight Truth Williams. Truth mm-hmm. Williams had about 4 inches in height on him. And I'm arguing with Carmen Graziano. He had Truth Williams. And he says, I know how to beat Tyson. I said, Carmen, I know just what you're going to do. You're going to throw uppercuts at Tyson. I said, when you do, he's going to counter with a left hook, and I said, he's going to knock your fighter's head off. No, we're going to, I said, it's very hard to hold Tyson off. I said, once he goes left and goes low, you know that left hook's coming.
Yeah.
The first time he tried it, he hit with it. My son and I are watching the fight. I said, if he does that again, he's done. Here comes another uppercut. And Tyson came over with a hook, and Truth Williams fell like a tree, like somebody cut it at the bottom. He went over in one piece. Boom, boom. He hit the floor at the end of the round, and I think I think he got up, and then he came out, and then Tyson got in the second round. But when a guy's got a good long reach on you, and you do go left, you're very vulnerable to that right hand. And Carmen thought, you could knock Tyson out with uppercuts. They said, it's not going to work. And that's damn sure what happened, you know? But you obviously have were around a lot of old fighters and old trainers, and they were fantastic.
Oh,
they were fantastic.
Yeah.
I had an old Jewish fellow who fought in the 20s. and I was boxing amateur in the 50s. And he was, what, and he fought, he didn't fight Benny Leonard, but he came close. He was of that caliber. He did fight for the title in Philly in the 20s. And, damn, he knew so much about boxing.
Yeah.
Jesus. You know?
There's no replacement. No replacement for those years and years of knowledge. It's just none and experience.
Well, they had 150 fights,
yeah,
you know?
There you go. Yeah,
and,
for sure.
And I have the ring record book from 1939, 38. These guys were fighting three times a month.
Jeez,
you
got,
you
a,
know?
Valuable, got a valuable magazine there.
I hang on to them. I'm gonna. I've got the 39 ring records. I got 38, 37. I got a bunch of them, and all the fights are recorded in there. It's a great book to read. I saved, and then I had a guy that was 90 years old that fought in the 30s. He gave me a couple of old historic books, and they're treasures, you know.
Yes.
And
yes.
And what they fought for peanuts in those days. They, you know. And a lot of them were no decision bouts, but they were 6-round exhibitions, 8-round, you know, and the paper would come out with a decision who won. The paper would, you know. But they fought all the time. I mean, God, I don't know how the hell they did it. They fight Philly 1 week, Baltimore the next week, Wilmington. I mean, Jesus. You know, I met these guys that were members of the local ring out of South Philadelphia. Name was Lou Massey and Tony Morgano.
Okay.
You know, going back, but that, like you say, the wealth of experience they had, you know. Look at Whitey Bimstein, what he did with Marciano.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Well, these old trainers, right. You know, they might say one good thing in a fight, you know, that turns the whole fight around. You know, and that's usually what happens. The old sage will come up with some kind of plan or something to say that changes the whole perspective of a fight.
They were men of few words. When they say something to you, one or two words, you know, and boom, they didn't say any more. They didn't say
right.
any more. You're right. I Alec Baldwin, he was the only trainer that Sonny Wiggins used. And I mean, he had, you know, in the 50s when Chico Vidor was fighting, we had a welterweight in our gym, went up there and knocked Vidor down 2 times. Damn near had him out. I mean, damn near wanted to fight. But, I mean, he had good quality fighters, but like you say, he's a man of few words. One or two things he'd say to you, you know?
Yeah.
I really like the guy. I like you say, I can still hear him now, you know? You're still hearing that.
A lot of young trainers nowadays, you'll hear them on TV giving a sermon for a minute, and the fighter don't remember anything when he goes back out.
Sure. Or the corner men, different things.
The corner men are terrible today. The corner men, the majority of them are awful. The worst one I ever heard is a guy that had Algieri.
Yes.
In the recent Algieri fight, did you listen to that guy in the corner? He was awful.
Yeah, a few times. Yeah, a few times I did. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He was awful.
Well, that's probably just lack of big fight experience.
Like you say, he was a young guy. He had no idea how to coach it. We got him just where you want him. You already lost 11 rounds. You got him where you want him. What the hell?
Now,
he's tired now because he never went. You know, 8 rounds. Never went past 8 rounds. Now he's tired. Now you can go after him. You know,
trying to use reverse psychology.
Yeah, maybe he was. Maybe he was.
That don't work with fighters. You got to tell
them. You don't have time in a minute. I remember I fought a real good counter puncher. First time I ever fought one. And I said to my trainer, I said, Jesus, this guy's killing me. What the hell am I doing wrong? He said, you're telegraphing your left hook. You go at him, you dip left, you get all your weight on the left side, you throw a hook. When you dip left, he moves to his right and throws the right hand right over top. And by the second round, my septum was deviated. I was bleeding from the nose, and before I turned the fight around, you know, I finally caught him. And I won the fight, but I got the shellacking on my life. And did I wise up after that? That was the end of me going out and trying to blow everybody the hell out of the ring with a left hook. because I said, boy, there's a better way to fight than this. My nose was sore for a month, and I had actually had a concussion from that damn fight. Because he would counter me with uppercuts, and he caught me on the bottom of the nose with an uppercut, and that really hurts.
Oh
yeah, you know?
those old horsehair gloves, they were like bricks.
Oh my God, those damn they really hurt. They really did, and they were hard, and they didn't give an inch. Now today's gloves are foam, lined with foam. They're totally different. Totally different.
Yes, that's for sure.
And those old horsehair gloves, they never threw them away till like. Somebody sport 2,000 rounds with the damn things, you know.
Yeah, they used to over and over. Boom, I remember the first punch that I took in the Youngstown Golden Gloves in 1968. We still had the horsehair gloves, and I said, "Wow, this is a lot different." It was like getting hit with a brick.
I recently was with a friend over the weekend. We were at a wedding. He won the Cleveland. Lightweight, way back. He's now 80 years old, and he won the Cleveland. And I remember Ohio was a hotbed for boxing, and they always said that Tony Zale was from Youngstown, Ohio. Was he from Youngstown or was he from another area?
Tony Zale, I never heard of him being from. We had Frankie Gennaro. Back then, we had Gennaro.
I remember Frankie Gennaro. He was a lighter weight.
I don't remember Zale being from Youngstown. If he was, people would have talked about it, you know, but I never...
Yeah, he fought all the time there, though. Seemed like every time he fought on those, Youngstown, Ohio, that was the hometown they used for him.
That was Ray Mancini's father's time way back then.
Hey, Dan, now it's Christmas time here, and you can take a wish. What's your wish for, let's say, for Keith and for Edna and anybody else that's in your ring, in your stable for next coming year for people they could have?
My Christmas wish for Edna would be to get a meaningful fight sometime in the first quarter of next year. I mean, he's had a lot of. What I call small-time fights for very small-time money. You know, he's got 41 fights now. He's a rated fighter. He needs a break, so we're going to try to get him a break, and hopefully Santa can help. With Keith, you know, our goal is to fight Maidana or another big name like a Khan or a Brook or somebody of that nature. And, of course, the prize is Mayweather. I mean, whether we actually, have it delivered to us is one thing, but we're going to keep striving for that, for Keith. Everybody wants to fight Mayweather. We're one of them.
Hey Dan, have you done any business with Arum head to head with Bob Arum?
Yeah, sure. Winky had a contract with him a very short time. We signed with him. He won the IBF title against Robert Frazier. It was back in the 90s. Late 90s.
Okay.
And then Winky wanted a release, so he got a release, and then we ended up fighting Mosley, but it was a brief relationship.
Okay. Yeah, he's tough. I had a friend that had a brief relationship with him too. He's a tough guy.
He's a great promoter, and he pays the top guys well. I mean, if you're a top guy, Bob Arum's a good, solid promoter to be with. I mean, look at Rios.
Right.
He made $6 million against Pacquiao. He pays the top.
You're right. He does. He offered a guy in our gym $500,000 to fight Hagler, and the guy came out of nowhere he said if I fight Hagler, he said I already scheduled a fight with the number one contender, and he says, well, you'll have to cancel that fight, and they tried to get Arum to pay the guy, and then Frankie Fletcher could go ahead and fight Edgar. He wouldn't do it. He said, look, I'm offering you an opportunity, and that's it. I'm not paying this guy $100,000, and then pay you $500,000. This was way back. That was a lot of money, that $500,000. But like you say, he did pay. He did pay. You come, I mean, $500,000 was a lot of money in 1960s and 70s. That was a lot of damn money. I'm trying to think, Frankie, how old... That was during the era when Roldan was around, and remember Roldan, the middleweight from Argentina? How long ago was that, Dan?
Jeez, I have no idea.
That's going back a ways.
Carlos Monzon is who I remember.
Probably 30 years ago. Yeah.
Okay.
But he's been in the business forever. But he had a lot more competition than he has now.
And he's one of the few promoters that understood the global business of boxing early on. You know, a lot of people just look at the U.S. market and maybe a small-time market, but he understood the global market. And now look, he's the first one to break through in China now. He's opened up China to a wealth of boxing. And I hear it makes Vegas look like Atlantic City compared to Vegas.
Wow. Yeah. You're right. He's a shrewd businessman. Very shrewd.
He's got to be. It's a tough game.
If
you're not thick skinned, you're not going to last in it. So, he's obviously a tough guy. So.
Yeah. You're not dealing with anybody that, from the Harvard Business School,
That's right.
In the ring. You better have a degree in the College of Hard Knocks or survive in that damn business. Yeah.
Yes, for sure.
All right, guys. Listen, have a nice holiday and so forth, you guys. My present to all you guys in the mail. I hope I got the right address.
Thanks,
I'm going to send you that book, Zito. I'm going to give you that ring record book. You're going to enjoy it.
I definitely will.
When I see you, I'm going to give it to you. I know it'll be in good hands. All right, guys. Take care. Dan, good luck, man.
Thank you, guys.
Bye.
Everybody.
Bye.
All right, you guys.
Dan, we want to thank you for being on with us tonight. It's been a pleasure, as always. You're always a very gracious host when we get up there, and you've always been very good to my good friend, Mr. Edner Cherry. I got a real soft spot in my heart for him and his family.
He was over my house yesterday.
Oh, nice. Nice. What a great guy. What a great family.
He is.
The trials and tribulations that poor kid's been through.
I can tell you this, that it's going to be different this year. That's all I can say.
Excellent.
It's going to be good for Edner. I've been working on something for a long time for him.
Excellent. Yeah. I know if you're working on it, that it'll come through. I mean, I know you and Winky for years now, and I got a lot of respect for both of you and everything you've done in town and for Winky's golf tournaments to help out All Children's Hospital and the things around town, foundations around town, and have a lot of respect. And it's always nice. We hear so much about the Arums of the world and the guys who don't really take care of their boxers, but it's a pleasure to see you on here and have our listeners listen to you and Kathy Duva, it's just a tremendous thrill for me to be able to do this and bring this to people. So I want to thank you and wish you all the very best in the coming year. We look forward to having you back on often. And
anytime. I enjoy it.
Great. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Okay, Frank. See? All right. You take care, and I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
Wow, Z, that was the fastest hour I think we've had in a long time.
I'll tell you this.
Well, it's fun listening to Doc go way back. You know, he goes way back.
Sure.
I like to hear the old stories.
Oh, yeah. He's a... Let's see, Chris will be 80 years old this year, and he not only is he a student of the fight game, he was a fighter. His kids were fighters. He managed his kids, and he had a lot of good friends in the industry. Carmen Graziano, Mr. Duva, a bunch of other guys.
Italians.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, they hung together, that's for sure.
Yes.
Z, you want to lead us out?
Absolutely, absolutely. I would like to thank Dan Birmingham. It'll be a pleasure to talk to him next year, and definitely good luck to his fighters and all that they do. I want to say thank you to Dr. Chris. It's definitely been a pleasure to Dr. Chris, and can't wait to talk with him next year either. these shows are definitely in memory of Bob, and if anyone wants to hear any fighting words, please do call, and everyone, have a happy holiday. Butch?
Okay, we want to thank Dan. What a personable guy. What a great guy. Knowledgeable guy. Couldn't do the game around here without people like him. We want to thank Chris, as always, my lifelong friend and golf partner many times. Z, I love being on here with you and Ty, and I want to wish everybody a very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. Ladies and gentlemen, these programs are brought to you each and every night of the week. Grateful appreciation to the men and women of the United States Armed Forces, men and women of Police and Fire Services. When you're out there and you see somebody in uniform, we're not all bad. Just give us a wink, shake our hand, say thank you, whatever you want to do, but just acknowledge that we're out there. And when people are running away, we're the ones that are running into danger. These programs are also dedicated to those who've lost their lives in the line of duty: Deputy Robert Anthony Carroll, Patrolman David Curtis, Patrolman Jeffrey Colcap, Sergeant Thomas Batinger, Patrolman Jeffrey Yazowitz, Patrolman David Crawford, Detective Randy Bell, Detective Ricky Childers, San Diego Officer Mike Hendler, Lieutenant Mike Zerba, Newcastle County Police, Patrolman Anafu Crispin, Lakeland PD, Deputy Barbara Pell, Broward County Sheriff's Office, Chief Al Hogle, Longbow Key Police Department, Chief Jimmy Ford, Wilmington Fire Department, Highway Patrolman Alonzo Moses, Philadelphia Highway Patrol, Highway Patrolman Brian Lazaro, Philadelphia Highway Patrol, Highway Patrolman Brian Murphy, Plymouth Township, PA Highway Patrol, Lieutenant Bob Neary, Philadelphia Fire Department, Deputy Chief Mike Godwin, Philadelphia Fire Department, MIT Officer Sean Collier, Sergeant Mike Wilson, Charlotte County Sheriff's Office, Deputy Jonathan Scott Pine, Orange County Sheriff's Office, Patrolman Robert Germain, Windermere, Florida Police Department, Trooper Chelsea Richards, Florida Highway Patrol, Firefighter, now Lieutenant, posthumously, Joyce Craig Lewis, and the two officers from New York that were killed today by a gunman. We don't have their names, but they'll be added to our list. My brothers and sisters, although you may be 10-7 at this point in time, at some time we'll be 10-10 at the table of the Lord. Until that time, may the rose rise up to meet you. May the winds be always at your back. May the rains fall softly on your face, and the sun shine softly on your face, and the rains fall softly on your fields. Until we meet again, may the good Lord keep you and your families always in the hollow of his hands. Good night.
Shemalek ma'ilama, shemahezahilma, sona shenevorat fet hakuigeget ma'ilma. Grief and pain are all I know for. fiery blade engaged to lead, he'd break the bravest in the
All units be advised, 1999 has responded to this last emergency. May God rest his soul.